The holidays may be over, but 2019 brings a whole lot of new goals to accomplish. And the best online cigar store in the world is here to help you make every day the celebration that you deserve. Just go to FamousSmoke.com/Hannity to pick out all your favorite cigars at the lowest prices. And Famous has an exciting new offer that we created exclusively for all you Hannity listeners. That web address is FamousSmoke.com/Hannity. And when you click the activate button, we'll instantly knock 20% off your entire order when you spend just $99 or more. That includes cigars, cutters, lighters, humidors, and more. Whether you want cigars by the box, samplers, five packs, or singles, Famous will deliver them to your door fresh and securely packed and ready for your smoking enjoyment. So remember to click the activate button and you'll get a full 20% off your order, and you'll only find it at FamousSmoke.com/Hannity. That's FamousSmoke.com/Hannity.
All right, glad you're with us. Loaded up today. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, we've got deep state news that we are going to get to in the course of the program today. We also have a lot going on at the border. We have in the deep state, Bruce Orr's wife is tasked with researching, Donald Trump's children for Fusion GPS. Melania. Wow, interesting role that she played in all of this. Lindsey Graham, who's going to join us later today, he wants answers from FBI Director Wray. So do I. I want answers. Is he proud of the pre-dawn raid, SWAT team, guns drawn, pre-dawn raid, 27 people, armored vehicles on Roger Stone's house for Roger Stone's big crime of a lying to Congress? And if we're going to do that to him, what about all the people we've listed on this program that we know have lied to Congress again and again? We're going to get to that. I can't believe what I'm going to report to you as we go back to yesterday. We'll talk more. We'll debate it later in the program. But I got to update you first. I don't know why the Democratic Party has decided that I guess they want to be the party of what? Wealth confiscation. Elizabeth Warren is running on the idea that, well, after people pay their federal taxes and after they pay their state tax, income tax, like in New York, it's 10%. California's 13.5%. And then after you pay, if you work in New York City, you pay 4% there. So, okay, so now you got 54%. Then you got to have the highest property taxes. Okay, add another 6, 7, 8%, whatever it happens to be. And now you're at well over 60 cents of every dollar gone, and sales taxes, hidden taxes, fees, all the other garbage. All right. So whatever you save after you pay all their taxes, she wants to come in and get another bite of the apple. That's the Democrat. That is the new radical left wing Democratic Party. Ocasio-Cortez, we'll get into this later. Her new Green Deal. Well, no fossil fuels in 10 years. And then that means that, the lifeblood of our economy and all the jobs associated with it, goodbye. The dumbest, we have to do it in 10 years because by 12 years, it's going to be the end of the world. She's told us that. You know, then we got Kamala Harris. Now, everybody's going to be forced. Medicare for all means you cannot have any private insurance, health insurance on your own. They're going to just trust us. They did so well, these same people, with Obamacare. Keep your doctor, your plan, save money. None of which happened. And it became a disaster. Millions lost their doctors, lost their plans, lost all options, and everybody paid a hell of a lot more. Some cases, in a single year, 100% increase in your premiums. Yeah, they did such a good job there. Now they're going to get rid of all private insurance. And then she did the little flip-flop and pulled back, but then she doubled down on the first flip. So it's a flip, then a flop, then back to flip. Flip-flop, flip. Kamala Harris. That's the party of the new radical, extremist, Democratic Socialist Party. All right, so yesterday we told you the story about what was going on in Virginia. Barely, it didn't pass, thank God, in the House of Delegates. I told you at the end of the show yesterday. So remember the woman, her name is Kathy Tran. She's a Virginia delegate. And she was the one that was being questioned about, well, whether this bill would allow a woman who has begun to give birth in her ninth month, begun the process of birthing, you know, is now dilated, which means that probably in the next 24 hours, that kid's here. The birthing process has begun, whether she would support abortion being legal under those circumstances. It's better on TV because you can see even she, when asked the question, is like dumbfounded at her own extreme position. But here's how it went down.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
make. I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
My bill would allow that. Wow. Now, here's where it gets very interesting. Now, the Daily Caller put out a piece. I don't even know what a cankerworm is. Does anybody in there know what a cankerworm is? It's apparently some kind of caterpillar. So the same day she puts forward this bill that she just described, even in the ninth month beginning to give birth, a woman would be legally allowed to have an abortion. This woman also put forward another bill that she
cankerworm
sponsored.
Cankerworm is the caterpillar of a North American moth that has wingless females. Cankerworms consume the buds and leaves of trees and can be a major pest.
Okay. So the same woman you just heard from, that delegate, Kathy Tran, introduced a bill that would protect the lives of fall cankerworms during certain months. Yeah, introduced. It was House Bill 2495, fall cankerworm spraying prohibited during certain months. So she's literally introduced a bill to save the cankerworm, some type of caterpillar thing. I guess if you live in the Commonwealth, you know what a cankerworm is. I guess, whatever. But then she says a woman dilating to give birth to a baby can legally then have an abortion in the ninth month. And they use this obscure and nebulous language. It's all done on purpose, meaning health. They don't get specific, you know, about physical health. That means emotional. And let me tell you something else, because some of you say no doctor or nurse would ever do this. That's not true. There are bad people in every industry, unfortunately. Very bad people. There are doctors. I'll give you some examples. There are doctors that are well known. You go in and say, oh, my back hurts. Okay. Well, what do you like to take for that? Oxycontin. But I take a lot of it. Okay. Here's your script. Come back in a month. That happens. You know, down in Florida, they're calling, ask Pam Bondi, they're calling them pill mills. You go in literally to one place. You see a doctor for 5 seconds. You tell him what you need. Diagnose yourself. He looks at it. Yeah, you're right. You walk out with a prescription, go right across the hall, and it gets filled. I mean, it's like legalizing drug dealing. There's certain people unethical in every business, unfortunately. So that same Virginia Democrat who wanted to make it legal to abort a baby even after the delivery has started, it's also crusading to protect the fall canker worm from any harm that evil human beings could cause them. You can't make it up. Remember, then here was the governor. If this passed the House of Delegates in Virginia, the governor was going to sign this. Listen.
no exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure, and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in?
All right, we're done here. Let me just go over this slowly. By the way, Nancy Pelosi was asked about this today. I don't know what he said. Oh.
You often talk about the diversity of viewpoints in the Democratic caucus and your group. There are pro-life Democrats in your group. Considering the comments from Governor Northam yesterday, how does that make it harder for pro-life Democrats in the party? And does that cause problems at all?
I'm sorry. I just don't know what he said yesterday. I just don't know.
Oh, we're going to take the I have no idea speech. They should have read it to her. Let me go over this slowly. If a mother in labor, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen, the governor said, that the infant would be delivered. That means the baby's born, separate, a person apart from the mother, delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. That means the infant is alive. If it wasn't alive, it wouldn't be kept comfortable. Then he goes on and said the infant would only be would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desire. Maybe they don't like the way the kid looks, and they don't, and the child starts having trouble breathing. We don't resuscitate the child? Really? And then he goes on and says, and a discussion would ensue then between the physicians and the mother. We're going to watch the baby's comfortable, born, alive, breathing, and we're going to sit and have tea and crumpets and talk about it? You know, the president actually tweeted out about this, that Democrats are becoming the party of late-term abortion, high taxes, open borders, and crime. Think about that. All right, we got a lot to get to today. 800, we're moving on from this. I got a lot of other news. There's a lot of border news. This caravan is real. There's three of them now. Smoking is not about politics. It's about people. There are 34 million Americans that smoke. But for me, Juul was a game changer. Because you switch to Juul, it's simple, it's satisfying, and no more smell. I watch people all the time. They run outside in the freezing cold. It can be grabbing their cigarette. Well, with Juul, you'll take a quick puff and you're good. That's it. Now, Juul is designed with smokers in mind. From its form to technology, it's easy to use, no buttons, no switches. And the goal of Juul is to impact the lives of adult smokers by providing a satisfying alternative. Switch to Juul. You'll wish you had done it a long time ago. To discover the smoking alternative that is nothing like any e-cig vape you have ever tried, go to this website, juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. juul.com/switchamerica. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show. we'll get back to that issue and save the caterpillar. But you can have an abortion at the.
Do you think we should call an entomologist in and have a second opinion, maybe, and maybe the caterpillar's
mom? Just like the farmers. Remember, we went all the way out to Fresno and the San Joaquin Valley area, and all the farmers. I was out there to save the Delta smelt, tiny little. It's like a minnow fish. Well, that meant that they farmers couldn't have water to grow their crops. And many of those problems still exist today as we tried to bring attention to it. We have a lot happening on the border. President gave a great interview, by the way, that we're going to run a little press conference later in the program talking about all of this, including what he said directly about the Democratic Party. And he was pretty clear about it, that Democrats are becoming the party of late term abortion, high taxes, open borders and crime. Well, on that issue of where the negotiations are. Look, I'm going to reiterate something I said yesterday. I think when we vetted Obama, I'm trying to give you my background here. Nobody else was really doing it to the extent we were. And we found Frank Marshall Davis. We went through his two books exhaustively. We talked about Acorn, Alinsky, the Church of GD America, Black Liberation Theology, Ayers and Dorn, and we also predicted that his policies as a radical leftist would fail. Then we, after the 8 years, we kept giving you in 2016 the horrible economic numbers, more debt than all 43 presidents before him combined, 13 million Americans. Think about that. 13 million more on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, worst recovery since the 40s. Only president never to reach 3% GDP. We were right about him. Just like we've been right about the deep state, and I got some breaking news on that. Mueller wants to just forget the Constitution today as it relates to Roger Stone. We've been right. I mean, you doubted that Donald Trump would govern conservatively. Well, the judges that he said he'd put on the Supreme Court, he gave us the names, and he actually did it. And, of course, he gave us the biggest tax cut in history. He said it, and he did it. He'd end burdensome regulation, and he did it. He said he'd fight for a repeal of Obamacare. Well, Republicans in the House and Senate, they screwed that up, but he still got rid of the mandate, the individual mandate, which is big. President said that he would stand up to dictators. Look at what he did with Little Rocket Man. We have another summit he's going to announce next week, and he said that today. And I told you he'd govern as a conservative, and many doubted me. Look, he gave money to liberals in New York. He said, I'm telling you, I know the guy. I've known him for decades. So those of you that think that him opening up the government was a win for Nancy Pelosi, you don't know him. He's tenacious and unrelenting. He's going to do it. 99.9%. Stay tuned. Hey, is your New Year's resolution to get a new job? Then it's time to know about Express Employment Professionals. Now, your local Express office is your connection to a new job, a new career, and you can even complete your application over the phone. And Express prepares job seekers for interviews. They have relationships with businesses. They will help you find that next job. Just go to expresspros.com and download the Express Jobs app. Now, job seekers, remember, you never pay a penny, not a cent, at Express. And each year, they're helping over 500,000 people find work through expresspros.com, and they can help you. Now, one Express associate, Sarah, said, thank you, Express, for assisting me professionally and personally. Words can neither qualify nor quantify how helpful your suggestions and advice have been. I am forever grateful for your support and your belief in me. You've all helped me shape my career, my professional life. I really appreciate everything you have taught me. Now, to find a location near you, just go to expresspros.com or download the Express Jobs app. It's time to get to know Express. 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941. Sean is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. All right, before we get to this 2020 Democratic primary is going to be very, very informative and entertaining. And the fact, you know, look at what the president said as it relates to the Democratic Party. And it's not just Virginia. It's New York, New Mexico, Rhode Island, California. I mean, this is not just an anomaly here. And the president says Democrats are now the party of late-term abortion. Why did this come out of nowhere in five states? late-term abortion, high taxes, open borders, and crime. Now, we're going to get into the whole 2020 race in a second here, but think about it. Nancy Pelosi is still stonewalling on wall funding or border funding for the wall. And she said today that there would not be any money for President Trump's border wall and the deal being worked out by a bipartisan negotiation team. There's not going to be any wall money in the legislation. Now, look, many of you, when I said I promise, I'm telling you, I know this guy. He's going to govern as a conservative. Well, I think his track record has proved that I was right. And I frankly, I understood why many people didn't think he would based on, all right, he's a New York businessman, but he sought and gave us the name of originalist justices, and he picked from the list. He actually said today in an interview with in a gaggle he had, or maybe it was the Daily Caller interview, he actually said that, yeah, I'm sticking to the list if there's ever another opening. But, you know, he was asked about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I wish her a long life and great health. But he said, you know, when asked, he would stick to the list that he gave us. That means keeping promises like tax cuts. That means keeping promises like ending regulation. That means keeping promises like negotiating new trade deals. They're doing one right now as we speak with China. They did one with Mexico. They did one with Canada. They're trying to get NATO to pay their fair share. We pay 72 cents of every defense dollar, and other countries aren't stepping up and paying their fair share, and he's putting pressure on them to do it, putting pressure on companies to build their factories and manufacturing centers here, and as a result, we have 5 million new jobs, almost a million new jobs in manufacturing alone, the jobs Obama said were never coming back. So, you know, I know that a change in strategy, you know, when it was getting to the point that Nancy Pelosi wouldn't do anything and still is saying there's no money for Congress, the president is very clear and he has the constitutional precedence and authority to do it. You know, and it comes from a very, very clear side on the president. It's called the Constitution. He's the commander in chief. We've chronicled, I won't go over everything, but I will tell you this. It's interesting that today in Phoenix, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials, you know, the one Kamala Harris compared to the KKK, don't you think there's a perception, ICE and the KKK? Well, those guys, they actually made the biggest fentanyl bust ever. And the agency, you know, gave some of the details. Apparently, it turned out to be huge. You know, 100 and the suspect who wasn't named, found in possession of 114.3 kilograms of fentanyl, 1 kilogram of fentanyl pills, 179 kilograms of methamphetamine, and other things. Now, get this. Now, if you want to know what we're learning about this, 114 kilos of fentanyl, you know, don't worry. Nancy has no, I guess she doesn't, she's not paying attention to how many people are dying from the opioid crisis, 90% of the heroin coming across the border. But a Mexican national was arrested by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents with enough fentanyl, pay close attention, to kill 57 million Americans. The fentanyl seizure, in this case, a record amount. Well, that's in the news as Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats won't give the president a dollar for the wall. And the president, we know what he's going to do. Just like I told you, he'd govern conservatively. I'm telling you, he's either going to send the military and just do it because he's the commander in chief and he has a job to protect the people of this country. And right now, this country is losing. We've talked to enough angel moms and dads. Nancy Pelosi was too busy, of course, to know that there are real people. And again, 98%, I think, really want to come here for the right reasons. But there are other people, the 2%, that are cartel members, MS-13 gang members, human traffickers, drug traffickers, etc. So we have a massive crisis on our southern border. For example, Monday, Rio Grande Valley Border Patrol agents, they apprehended MS-13 gang members from El Salvador and a Guatemalan male who was not only previously removed but convicted in New York for attempted murder. He was trying to get back in. They got him, thank God. El Paso Border Patrol apprehended a family unit in which the adult was previously found guilty of felony burglary and sentenced to 4 years in confinement in New Jersey. He was traveling with a child, a minor child. Also, on Monday, El Centro Border Patrol agents apprehended a Mexican national who was previously removed in 2011 after he was convicted in Georgia 2007 for felony child molestation. He was subsequently sentenced to 5 years in prison, also convicted for abduction and kidnapping in Virginia. They got him, too. And the Border Patrol agents arrested another Mexican national who was previously convicted in 2012 for child molestation in Decatur, Illinois. And the man served 5 years of his 10-year sentence and was removed from the U.S. in April of 2017. But he was on his way back. And by the way, they arrested a 48-year-old Mexican national who was previously arrested, convicted in 96 of rape. That would be in LaGrange, Kentucky. Man served 2 years of his 5-year sentence, was removed from the U.S. in 98. He's on his way back. You know, that's the cost of the 2%. That is outrageous. So the president tweeting out today, stop playing political games, a wall is a wall. So if you ask me, and I know some of you said, well, why did he give up on the government shutdown? Because it wasn't working anyway. So he's going to do, I'm predicting, I have no inside knowledge, all these conspiracy theories that the president listens to Hannity. Well, I'm very happy he watches the show sometimes, but I've known him for over 2 decades, and I'm telling you, this is a man that is unrelenting, tenacious beyond anything you've seen. And if you know, the funny thing is he kept all these conservative promises that many of you didn't think he'd keep. Changes strategies, and so many are ready to just throw them overboard. Ah, that's it. He's not like your average politician. He's going to either send the military down to build the wall and take defense funds, declare a national emergency, let it fight out in the courts, but because of its status would go quickly. 72% in a new poll out today think Congress will fail to reach a border deal. I would be part of that 72%. 75% believe in building the wall in one poll. Democrats are offering nothing. So at this point, that's where we're headed. Now, if I'm wrong, you can call me on February 15th or sometime thereafter, if it may take an extra couple of days, and say that I was wrong. I don't think I'm going to be wrong. I think the president is going to keep fighting to keep his promise, because that's what he's done, which is a good thing. We always say we want politicians to fight for the promises they make, and he's doing it. People I'm most worried about are the weak Republicans in the House and Senate. By the way, Lindsey Graham, we're going to talk to him about it. He's supporting the president on building this wall. We now have several busloads of migrants that were dropped off in Highway 2. We have 3 separate caravans coming. President has now ordered thousands of additional troops right now, on top of the troops that have not left because of the 15,000 strong caravan. That's 1 of 3 coming to the country, even as we speak. And we told you about this guy in Texas, this MS-13 gang member, attempted murder, apprehended at the Texas border. We told you about this other guy, 4 murders out in Nevada. He's been charged now. And people don't seem to think it's a high priority for them. One of the things that we're watching, I have one little item on the deep state. We'll get into more of this because Lindsey Graham wants to know why Director Wray is allowing Mueller to send 27 SWAT guys in full armor gear and armored vehicles, 17 vehicles, to arrest Roger Stone for lying to Congress. Now we find out that after the arrest of Stone and the pre-dawn raid, that none of the other, any Democrat doesn't get that type of treatment when they lie to Congress repeatedly. If we have equal justice, that'll happen if the new attorney general does his job. Anyway, now in a court filing, the special counsel Robert Mueller and the Justice Department attorneys prosecuting Roger Stone are requesting more time to sift through the voluminous and complex evidence that they have collected. And they said designate the case as complex, a move that would allow for more time for trial preparation. I guess more time for singing and composing, just a guess. Under the Speedy Trial Act of 1974, Stone's trial must start within 70 days of his arraignment in federal district court in D.C., which took place Tuesday, unless Jackson, the judge, agrees to pause the clock and give all parties a reasonable amount of time to prepare for the trial. Why would they want to do that? I thought we had a right to a speedy trial. Mueller and the government told the attorneys are sifting through multiple hard drives containing several terabytes of information, as well as bank and financial records. Oh, they're looking to see if Roger Stone paid his taxes. There we go. They're not looking for collusion of any kind. Also learned Bruce Orr's wife. Oh, her task was to research the president's children with Hillary's money, funneled through a law firm to Fusion GPS, while her husband was acting as a conduit for Christopher Steele, even to the special counsel. Now, she was looking into the... Oh, and Melania, too. I mean, unbelievable. What's getting to be very entertaining is watching Democrats now fight each other. Ocasio-Cortez on this former CEO of Starbucks. By the way, if Starbucks coffee compared to blackriflecoffee.com/on, there's no comparison. It's like, ugh. Once you try blackriflecoffee.com, you will never go back. But anyway, he's thinking of running. And like everyone on the left, why are billionaires who want to run for president never told to work their way up? Well, Schultz is the son of a truck driver who lived in a housing project, became a billionaire, which is, I thought, part of the American dream. Ocasio-Cortez is also saying the future of humanity hangs on climate change being a big issue in 2020. Uh-oh. And you got Elizabeth Warren. Capitalism without rules is theft.
Capitalism without rules is theft. Encouraging companies to build their business models on cheating people, that's not capitalism. That's not competition in the marketplace. That's not producing consumer surplus. So what I believe is capitalism with serious rules. And that means rules where everybody gets a chance to play.
Okay. Capitalism, you risk money. You build the business, building services or goods that people want, need, and desire. And if they don't like it and they don't like the price, they're not going to buy it. But she, of course, is advocating the plan that's after you paid all your federal income taxes, your state income taxes, your city taxes, your sales taxes, your property taxes. After you paid them all, she wants to go in and tax what you say, tax it again. And we already know we have a death tax. If you die, then you pay more. Schultz responding, saying, I'm a billionaire. I thought that was the American dream. He's right. You know, we have Cortez saying, we have a billionaire activist having a huge impact. They're actually saying Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a centrist. Okay. Schultz is saying about Elizabeth Warren's programs that will lead to socialism in America. So now you got a fight going on between the Democratic Party, and you got this marquee. They want us off all fossil fuels in 10 years. This is the new Green Deal with Ed Markey. It's specifically vague. And it's now, apparently, it includes a goal of 100% renewable electricity within 10 years, federal jobs guarantee for people who are working in the low-carbon transition, universal health care. Well, we know Medicare for All is $32 trillion, which is almost our whole budget for 10 years. And Democrats, you know, what do they stand for? They're, like, trying to out-extreme themselves. You know, you got a pro-Beto group leader posting a video of a shirtless Bernie Sanders, quote, drunkenly singing in the Soviet Union in 1988, where I guess he went on his honeymoon. Interesting, the president's approval rating with Hispanics up 19%. There was a Washington Examiner piece citing a poll that on demographics that more Hispanics will be than African-American voters in 2020. But this is your Democratic Party. This is your, as I've been saying, radical extreme Socialist Democratic Party. They're making it easy. I thought it'd take 100 days before America saw through this. I was wrong. It'll be faster.
I'm 66 years old. I do not own a gun. I do not have a valid passport. I have no prior criminal record. I'm charged with non-violent process crimes. To storm my house with a greater force than was used to take down bin Laden or El Chapo or Pablo Escobar, to terrorize my wife and my dogs, it's unconscionable.
27 SWAT-dressed agents, armored vehicles, 17 vehicles in total, pre-dawn raid. Now, it's happened three times. Happened to Roger Stone most recently, also happened to Paul Manafort, also happened to Michael Cohen and his office and home at the same time, and he's a lawyer for the president, so much for attorney-client privilege in the end. But how far is too far? When do you say that, excuse me, this is now crossing a line? This is not who we are. All this would take is a phone call to the lawyer of Roger Stone. He would have surrendered. What kind of message are they trying to send here? Well, Senator Lindsey Graham, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he wrote a letter to the FBI director, Ray, on Wednesday asking for a briefing on last week's arrest of Stone. And Senator Graham joins us now. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Well, I mean, maybe if they thought that he had guns, I would imagine they'd be able to search and see if he ever bought a gun. He didn't have a valid passport. But the question is, this is, you know, lying to Congress. Is how come nobody else gets arrested like this?
Well, that's the point, I guess. The point is, somebody has to watch those who watch us. I'm really a big fan of the FBI. I admire the agents out in the field. But what have we learned in the last couple of years? That the FBI and the Department of Justice during the Obama years was very political. The Mueller investigation is moving forward. But the question I have is, what is the message here? A phone call would have resulted in him coming to be booked. If you want to execute a search warrant, the question is, this the normal way you execute a search warrant of a nonviolent offender's home? I doubt it. So I want to know, what was the message? And you're right, we live in a country where even those who enforce the law have some accountability to the rest of us.
There's a whole list of people that we know lied before Congress. We know, for example, Uma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, although apparently they got an immunity deal. They didn't get the pre-dawn raid, but they lied about knowledge of the server of Hillary Clinton. And then there were multiple emails that showed up with their names on it. We know that James Clapper and Brennan lied. We know that even Eric Holder on Fast and Furious lied. We know that, you know, I can keep going down the list of well-known people that are Democrats that lied to Congress. I'm worried we don't have equal justice or application of our laws anymore. And if we don't, that's a big problem if we want to continue to be a strong constitutional republic, in my mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the law is there to call balls and strikes, as Justice Roberts said. But the bottom line is, when you look at the FISA warrant application for Carter Page, if you're not disturbed by that as an average day citizen, average everyday citizen, something's wrong. So you got to remember that a warrant was obtained against an American citizen under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act based on a dossier that was paid for by the Democratic Party. The information was gathered by a foreign agent from Russia. None of it's been verified. That's a big deal to me, and you can't find any information about that in the mainstream media, but I promise you the Judiciary Committee will look at what I think was an abuse of power.
All right, let me ask you, because I'm worried about the fact that there it was Russia collusion, and let me explain. We know that James Comey, speaking of lying, that he told us that he never wrote or began to write a report as it relates to Hillary's investigation until after the investigation was complete. We know that to be false, that he and Peter Strzok, who thought that Hillary should win $100 million to zero, and he was the one that interviewed Hillary, and he was the one in part that started the Trump-Russia narrative 2 years ago. We do know they were writing that exoneration in May, and then they exonerated her in July. And right. Do you have any doubt that Hillary Clinton violated the Espionage Act, because we did find top secret classified information, special access information on that hard drive in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet? Do you have any doubts?
Well, rather than being the judge and jury here, I think if you had done that, you'd be in trouble. I think if I had done what she did, we'd all be in trouble. I think if the investigation, the shoe was on the other foot, this was a, you know, a. The bottom line here is the people investigating Hillary Clinton hated Trump, wanted him to lose, and how could she win if they indicted her for compromising classified information? Mr. Horowitz suggested that their behavior of the agents in the Department of Justice, Strzok and Page, was out of line, that it did show bias. Comey, in my view, just screwed it up every way you could screw it up. But I'm going to start with a warrant. I want you to understand how important that is to me as a lawyer, that there's got to be some checks and balances regarding those who have the power of the law to make sure they use it appropriately. And I want to find out what happened with the FISA warrant application. Did the court know that this document was a paid-for document by a political party? What do you think the Russians did here? I think the Russians saw Mr. Steele as a way to basically throw garbage at Trump, and that's what they did.
All right, so you, in your position as the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you have oversight powers on issues like this.
Right.
So here's what we do know about the FISA. We do know that it was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton. We do know that in August of 2016, Bruce Orr testified under oath that, in fact, he warned all the top people at the FBI and the DOJ that Christopher Steele hated Donald Trump, was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton, and that it was unverified and not corroborated. But a very famous memo was put out. It's called the Grassley Graham Memo. That would be you.
Right.
That says the bulk of information was the phony Russian Clinton bought and paid for dossier. And we know that, politically speaking, they only had an asterisk that said it may have a slight political taint. That sounds like an omission of fact to me to commit a fraud. And more importantly, they didn't verify or corroborate it because a lot of it turned out to be untrue. Is that a fraud against the FISA court judges? And is that a crime?
Well, it's certainly not the system that I think we should tolerate in America. The same document was provided to the president by Comey after he got elected and says, I want you to know about this. We can't verify it. We don't know if any of it's true, but I just want to let you know it's out there. Well, that same document was used by the Department of Justice and the FBI to obtain a warrant against an American citizen. So they swore to the court that probable cause test was met, because without the dossier, there would have been no warrant.
Andrew McCabe said that himself. Andrew McCabe said no dossier,
right.
no FISA warrants.
So let's just slow down here for a second. You got the FBI director telling the newly elected president, here's some information we've obtained. We can't verify it, but we just want to let you know it's out there. That same document was used on four different occasions to obtain a warrant against an American citizen. What happened?
I think that's a great question. Now, let me ask you this. If it turns out that what they presented to the court, they were told it was not verified, so they were aware of it. They were told who paid for it. They were aware of it. And yet they used the information and presented it as fact to a FISA, multiple times in the original FISA application and three subsequent renewal applications. Is that committing a conscious fraud on the court, a conspiracy to commit a fraud on the court? And what would happen if you or I did that?
Well, number one, my job is to oversee the Department of Justice and the FBI in matters like this. So if I believe, after looking into it, that the information provided to the court was unverified and they misled the court, what I will do is write a letter to the new Attorney General. Hopefully it'd be Mr. Barr, and say, the committee is very concerned about this process. Please take action. And there's two things he can do. Three things, I guess. Ignore it, appoint a special counsel, or deal with it internally. Mr. Horowitz, the IG, is looking at the FISA warrant abuse as I speak, but that's no substitute for the committee. The Congress is a check and balance on the executive branch. In many ways, oversight is one of them.
All right, let me move on to the issue of immigration. We have a lot of news that has been coming out today. We now have three caravans now headed towards the United States, one with about 15,000. We had an announcement today. U.S. border officials in Arizona made the biggest fentanyl seizure ever in history, some 254 pounds of this deadly drug, which, you know, 3 grains of salt will kill a 250-pound man. We have other instances where gang members, MS-13 gang members and cartels, and 90% of our heroin comes from there. What's the status? Because I don't see Democrats making a deal ever, because they seem to hate Trump more than they like DACA kids or Dreamers.
Well, I think you pretty well put your finger on the problem. I was hopeful that once the president reopened the government for 3 weeks, there were 8 Democratic senators went on the floor and said, if you'll reopen the government, we will negotiate and we'll provide more funding than previously allocated for the border wall slash barrier, and we want to talk about DACA and TPS reform. I was encouraged, but the Democratic leadership has thrown cold water on any combination of events that would allow the president to get his wall funding and solve other problems. Now, here's what I expect to happen, that this committee of 17 is not going to produce a product much different than what the president said no to previously. So I would not recommend shutting the government down, because that doesn't provide you much leverage. What I would recommend the president to do is to use his power as commander-in-chief to secure a border that is badly broken, to put barriers up where it makes sense using the military. That's what I would do if I were the president.
So does the president need to declare a national emergency, or can he, like, for example, I know past presidents, including Obama and Bush, have sent troops to the border. The president has done it. As a matter of fact, with the oncoming caravans, multiple caravans, the president is actually added to the forces down there already, and he's sending 5,000 of them. Do you see any legal obstacle as a commander-in-chief to stop a criminal element that is bringing heroin, fentanyl, gangs, cartels, and bad people across the border that commit crimes against American citizens? And I know maybe it's only 1 or 2% of that population that wants that is coming here, but a population that is dangerous, is that within his constitutional role to protect this country?
Yes, I believe so, and let me tell you why. You know, before I had this job, I was a judge advocate in the military and spent about 33 years practicing military law. The Posse Comitatus Act is a federal law prohibiting the military from carrying out law enforcement functions. It was passed after Reconstruction. But Bush, 43, President Obama, and President Trump have all sent Title 10 active duty troops to the border on various occasions to supplement the security of the border, not becoming Border Patrol agents, but providing assistance to the Border Patrol. They're not apprehending people, but they're helping man post and surveil. So it's my belief that based on the practices of the past 3 presidents, including Trump, that he's well within his power to send the military down to the border, not to become law enforcement officers, but to provide barriers where barriers make sense. I was in the train station today in New York. I saw 4 National Guard soldiers in full fatigues and with AR-15s walking around the train station. They're there as part of a program where you federalize National Guard soldiers to help with security at big targets, big city targets. I think this is the same.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. Senator Lindsey Graham of Texas, he actually has a funny story. He was in studio last night, and we'll see if I can get it out of him. It involves him and the president.
So I want to let your listeners know that there's a reaction to this far-left rhetoric in the Senate by more mainstream Democrats that I think will eventually allow us to get the wall funded and do some things for the DACA recipients and TPS recipients. There's a deal in the making, and the more extreme Nancy Pelosi gets, the more likely we'll have a deal.
It can't include amnesty. You're going to lose every conservative. supporter of the president, but it's not included. The president was pretty clear about that.
I promise you it will not.
Most Americans want to do two things. They want to secure our border, and they want to be reasonable to the people like the DACA population. If he gives in now, that's the end of 2019 in terms of him being an effective president. That's probably the end of his presidency. Donald Trump has made a promise to the American people. He's going to secure our border. Every Democrat in the past has voted for border funding. Now they're changing their mind.
It's too important. Too many lives at stake. Too much danger to the country. Senator, good to see you.
That's the end of us if we give on this issue as Republicans.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Senator Graham is with us. A lot more to get to. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. His personal relationship with the president, that's coming up next. Quick break. Right back. We will continue. All right, we've been talking with Lindsey Graham, Senator of South Carolina. A lot of issues on the table today. His letter to Director Ray. Obviously, this bizarre hatred of Donald Trump and his personal relationship with the president, and the senators agreed to stay a little longer with us. So last night, you're in the green room at the Fox News Channel. Who were you talking to?
Well, I was talking to the president, and you rudely interrupted us.
I did. I said, Senator, what's going on?
Number one, the room's not green.
No.
And Roger Murdoch's really cheap when it comes to amenities.
Rupert Murdoch. Oh, boy, you're in trouble.
Rupert, I'm sorry. Sorry, Rupert. Sorry. Sorry about that, Rupert.
Let me ask you this. In 2016, I've known Donald Trump for decades, now the president. And before the election, there were many of my conservative brethren, from New York, donated to liberals, he was once pro-choice, where's he going to stand? Well, we now know where he stands on Supreme Court justices, tax cuts, ending burdensome regulation, energy independence. We know he's tough on foreign entities that are a threat to the U.S. We're making progress all over the world, trade deals, et cetera. All these people that are doubting that Donald Trump are going to build the wall, I don't care how he gets the money. I have zero doubt he's getting the money and he's getting it done.
Well, I have zero doubt that there's a problem at the border. Obama saw the problem. Bush saw the problem. Trump has seen the problem. Unlike the other two presidents, he is going to use the military in a proper way to put up barriers where it makes sense. As to Donald Trump, the president, I did not vote for him. I campaigned against him. I ran against him. I lost. He won. I'm very pleased with his presidency.
Well, wait a minute. You voted for him in the general election, correct?
No, I voted for a guy I wouldn't know it walked in the door. Evan somebody. So the bottom
Evan
line
Evan McMullen?
Is, yeah.
You never voted for Trump?
No, I've told Trump that.
What did he say?
So, he said, well, maybe you'll vote for me next time. I said, I plan to. So,
and now you guys have gotten very close. Do you feel you misjudged him?
It came about through Goff. I mean, he was gracious enough to invite me down to the White House and ask me my opinion about North Korea and a few other things. I gave it to him. Then we played Goff, and I was talking to him last night. He says, how do you think it's going? I said, Ms. President, I think Nancy Pelosi is hell-bent on not giving you a dime more than you got before. Unfortunately, you're going to have to do this by yourself. Don't let the naysayers in the Republican Party tell you you can't. You have all the powers, Commander-in-Chief, you need to secure that border. Do it. The border's broken. And do it if you have to. I don't think you're going to get a deal, so just go ahead and do it. I wish they would work with you, but apparently they're not. So I just got back from Turkey. I just got back from Pakistan. He's put the Taliban on the run. That's why they're at the peace table. He's rebuilt the military. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh were terrific picks. He's cut our taxes. He rebuilt the military. He is deregulating the country. In many ways, the best is yet to come. He's a deal maker, but you got to have two to make a deal. And so count me in helping him any way I can. And when I disagree with him, I'll tell him.
Amazing story. He turned out to be a very conservative president, didn't he?
Well, I tell you, I don't know what I would have done differently.
Wow, amazing.
I think he's got a hell of an agenda for a conservative.
You might tweet less than him. I might guess that.
Well, on that side, I can't even, hold a candle to him. But the point is, there's Donald Trump, the personality.
Yep.
And there's Donald Trump, the president. And if you care about policy, I do. And there's Donald Trump, the man. He's a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun together. We've gone to dinner. You've been to dinner with us. I enjoy my time with him. On occasion, I disagree with substance, and more than on occasion, I disagree with style. But the point is, he won, I lost, and I want to help him. And from my point of view, we're doing very well as a country under President Trump, and the best is yet to come.
You see, what a lot of people really threw me under the bus in 20. Look, I kind of go out my own way on a lot of things. I'm, you know, some of my best work or things that I'm most proud of, Senator, is that, you know, when nobody else in the media would vet Barack Obama, I went hard. We discovered Frank Marshall Davis, Black Liberation Theology, Alinsky, Acorn. We discovered the Church of G.D. America and Reverend Wright, and we're the only person to ever interview Wright, and that was in 2007. And we were the people that found Ayers and Dorn and were warning the American people. And, you know, after 8 years, when you have 13 million more Americans on food stamps and 8 million more in poverty, and he took on more debt than 43 people before him in that job, combined, I think I was proven right. The Iranian deal on foreign policy speaks for itself. But another thing that I did is I told conservatives he's not, just because he was a New York real estate developer and he donated to Democrats and was once pro-choice and explained how he became more pro-life, and he's telling you the judges he's going to pick. This is a guy that is unrelenting, tenacious beyond anyone I've ever seen in keeping his promises. So as I told people he would govern and keep his promises as he had, I'm telling them now that wall is going to get done one way or the other. Now people can...
Well, it's, you proved to be right, but it's not what you said he would do. It's what he has done.
Exactly.
Not, I mean, the point is, I don't care. His worst critic has to give him credit for actually doing the things he said he was going to do. He has appointed conservative judge. He gave us a list before the election of who he would pick from,
yep.
And he picked from that list.
No one's ever done that before.
Right. He said he would rebuild the military. The military is getting stronger by the day. He set aside sequestration. He's cut taxes. We have a growing economy. If you're a working man or woman out there, your wages are up and your job opportunities are more than they were before. He got out of the worst deal since Munich, which was the Iran nuclear deal. He's trying to break the Ayatollah's back, who's the largest state sponsor of terrorism. And he stood by Israel, unlike any president in my lifetime. He said he'd move the embassy to Jerusalem. He has.
You know, how many other presidents have made that promise and never...
And he beats me in golf, so that's all I can tell you.
Yeah. What is it... Because it's interesting, because I think you two have become very good friends, have you not? I mean,
I mean, Ivanka is a very classy young lady. He's got a lot of people around him. Jared is smart as a whip. First Lady, I think, represents us well. He's been kind enough to invite me into his world. We've had our differences, and, you know, I love John McCain like a brother, but I want to help this president, and I like President Trump. I don't like everything he says or does, but from my point of view, if as a United States senator, I've never had more access to the president.
Listen, let me tell you what it might be, too. And I love South Carolina. I've been to Hall's in Charleston, which is like one of the greatest steakhouses
yeah,
ever.
Right.
And I love the people of South Carolina, as I know you do. But you're not going to hear as many, well, certain words used down in South Carolina as you're going to hear in New York. And
That's pretty true.
And
they will be said differently.
You know, the vernacular is a little more harsh. I mean, but if you understand that a little bit, if you could just make an allowance for that a little bit, you know, like the fact that Donald Trump will fight with the press and call them fake news, and the fact that the president takes on all comers. Well, it's also the same guy that's out there fighting to keep our borders safe and secure, and, you know, identifies a life and death issue. Well, what was Nancy and Chuck fighting for? What were they fighting for in that battle?
Well, I guess they're fighting for the status quo, which is nothing ever happens in Washington worth a damn. The bottom line is that he's a street fighter by nature.
Yeah.
There's nobody too small that he won't take a jab at. There's nobody too large he's afraid of. But there's a side to him you really don't know, at least I didn't know, until I played golf with him and had dinner. He's a very gracious host. If you ever spend any time with the president, he goes out of his way to make sure you're having a good time. And all I can say is that the record speaks for itself. I'm in the trenches helping him where I can. We're trying to work out our differences on Syria. And this constant nagging and criticizing everything he does has driven me into his camp like a lot of people. I mean, enough is enough.
You see, I don't worry about you. I've seen you step up. I mean, I think you had your finest moment during the Kavanaugh hearings, and I've known you a lot of years, and we've had some fights and disagreements over those years, too. But I will tell you that the one thing I'm afraid of, I'm not afraid of what you're going to do. I know you're going to fight for the border, and you're going to give it everything you got. I believe guys like Ted Cruz will do the same thing. What I do worry about is some of your other fellow Republicans in the Senate and the House.
Well, let me tell you, listen, what's the president to do? The Speaker of the House is not going to give him a penny more than he had before, which is not enough. The $5.7 billion represents the cost of the top 10 locations the Department of Homeland Security says you need a barrier on the 634 miles of fencing we've authorized. If you ask the question of that 634 miles, where are the 10 locations you need a barrier now? They gave us the information. It's $5.7 billion. It's not an unreasonable request, but he's not going to get any more than he got before. So he can't agree that that's enough. That's the old Washington way of doing business. So he's going to have to do it by himself. To my Republican colleagues, what is he supposed to do? If the Democrats won't work with him and the Republicans undercut him, how is he supposed to be successful?
Well, these are things they say that they're going to fight for. I was very disappointed. I thought, you know, for 7 years we heard repeal, replace. 7 years comes later, and all of a sudden, guys that 2 years voted for the same bill in the Senate, seven of your colleagues, they just flipped their position because it was real this time. Like many in the House, you know, all those show votes. Here's what I want to say, though. If you look at, so Pelosi and Schumer, they say they want DACA. They want Dreamers. They care about furloughed employees, but they won't even sit at a table. To me, I interpret that as they hate Trump more than they cared about government workers or Dreamers or DACA. And I'll tell you the other thing. You know, now what is this obsession with abortion up to dilation that they're support? Like Virginia, New York, New Mexico, Rhode Island, California, five states out of nowhere are fighting for this. Why did they think that's the most popular thing people are thinking about and want? Because they don't. It is the most gruesome thing I've ever heard.
So when Nixon won, they tried to beat him with somebody more liberal. When Reagan won, beat Carter, they came out with Mondale. So they're headed down the road of picking somebody very liberal. Their agenda is getting to be disconnected from where I think most Americans want their country to go. You know, abortion is a difficult issue for a lot of Americans, but it's certainly not in the last trimester. About 80% of the country believes at that point in time, unless there's some real health, you know, medical life of the mother issue, that the baby needs to, you know, to make it through the birthing process. The bottom line is Trump is driving them crazy. The media has lost all objectivity. The Democrats feel like if he wants it, they can't do it, even though they voted for more wall funding in the past. Even though they supported DACA and TPS in the past, they have a chance here to give the president money for a barrier where it makes sense, give the DACA recipients a more certainty in their life, and clean up a broken TPS program. And the reason they're not doing it is they just can't bring themselves to work with him on something that they believe may help him. And that's sad.
It's beyond sad. It's pathetic, and it's unprincipled. Quick break. Right back. We will continue. All right, as we continue with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, I do have a message for some of your fellow Republicans, if you don't mind bringing them back to the Senate.
Okay.
Any of them that don't support this president on this issue of border security,
right,
I am going to give out their phone numbers in the Senate, your colleagues, every day, so that people can call them, and I will work against their reelection. Because I'm tired of people that make promises and don't fight.
You know, I love my colleagues. We try to be a team here, but I just don't get how we would. What is he to do? If Obama sent troops to the border because he thought you needed federal forces to secure the border, what's the difference of sending a soldier to the border to build a barrier, not to take over law enforcement, but just to construct a barrier to keep us safe from gangs, murderers? If we undercut the president, president here, and the Democrats won't work with him to give him the money they voted for in the past, I just don't know how the Republican base could tolerate that. I disagree with the president at times, and I've said so. When it comes to this, he is dead right.
Do you find that you can persuade him when you do disagree?
Oh my God. I mean, the thing I like most about the president, he can run hot, then he calms down, then he'll listen. He calls up everybody. He calls you up. He calls me up. He has a kitchen cabinet that, you know, you couldn't, you know, takes an aircraft carrier. The bottom line is he does consult with people. He cares about what you think. And I've seen him change his mind based on facts and presentation.
Another
Obama
myth.
Obama never did. I went into Obama's Oval Office, the president, and begged him not to pull out of Iraq. Listen to your commanders. It's going to bring about holy hell in the Mideast. When Assad gassed the children the first time, John McCain and Lindsey Graham went to the Oval Office and said, "We'll stand by you, hit this guy, hit him hard." He never changed his mind about Iraq and Afghanistan. He set us on a course where we would fail. This president, President Trump, does listen to the military, and he takes counsel and advice from people who I think he should be listening to. What more can you ask?
All right, Senator, I know I've taken way more of your time than we thought. Thank you so much for it, and we will see you. Let's build the wall. Yeah, now.
Build the wall.
Tell your colleagues I send the message of love.
I think they will get it here in a bit. Thanks.
All right, thank you so much. Hey, I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
All right, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. It is the reaction we got yesterday to this, woman, this delegate, Democratic Party in the House of Delegates in Virginia, Kathy Tran. You know, when you see the video, which we showed last night, she can't answer her own question because she's being asked the question. Even if a woman has begun the birthing process and is dilated, are you going to support abortion at that time? Listen to this.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make.
I understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
The birth has begun. Now, if you think that's bad, well, we found out more information about Kathy Tran. I found this out today. So this Democrat, by the way, this barely got defeated. All the Democrats pretty much in the House of Delegates in Virginia supported this. But remember, the applause in New York, and now you got bills in Rhode Island percolating in New Mexico and California. I mean, why has this now become the issue? Abortion up to birth. You know, we find out that this woman, Kathy Tran, the Democratic Virginia delegate, who came under fire for that ridiculous, insane, and gruesome answer of hers. Anyway, she's also sponsors another bill in the Virginia House of Delegates that would maintain that the termination of pregnancy up to 40 weeks old. Well, she's also the patron of the bill that would protect, get this, the lives. I'm not making this up. You're going to think I am. To protect the lives of, quote, fall cankerworms during certain months. That's right. Democratic Virginia delegate Kathy Tran introduced what is House Bill 2495, fall canker worm spraying prohibited during certain months. And by the way, on January 9th, the same day that House Bill 2491, the one we're talking about, was entertained as well. Now, I don't even know what a canker worm is. Apparently, I guess a bill to save like caterpillars. I don't even know what one is. She wants to save the caterpillars, but a woman that is now beginning to deliver a baby, you can abort if our bill passed because the governor supported it. Now, if you think she's bad, listen to this dopey governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
You're no exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in, as is currently required? She's trying to lift that requirement.
Well, I think it's always good to get a second opinion and for at least two providers to be involved in that decision, because these decisions shouldn't be taken lightly. And, mm-hmm. and so, I would certainly support more than one provider.
All right. Let's go back to the phone.
I can't believe what I just heard. Anyway, joining us now to discuss now what is, I guess, the top priority item, infanticide, of the Liberal Democratic Party, Danielle McLaughlin. Good luck defending this today, Danielle. Jonathan Gillum, former FBI agent, federal air marshal, author of Sheep No More. Danielle, let's begin with the governor's own words. If a mother's in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be comfortable. That means the infant's alive. The infant is viable on its own. They're going to keep the infant comfortable. Then he says the infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desired. And then, while they're deciding whether or not they're going to help a new baby in distress, they're going to have a, quote, discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. What words come to mind to describe that in your head? What would you call it?
I'm utterly confused by the governor's response. I don't think there's a doctor on this planet that would abort a baby that was being...
All right. You give me a hypothetical. Slow down. No. Let's deal with the actual words the governor said, that the infant would be delivered, the infant's kept comfortable, they'd only be resuscitated if the mother and family desired it, and then the discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother. So while the baby's struggling, alive, alone, viable, breathing on its own, they're going to have a talk, I guess. Maybe tea and crumpets or what?
The point of this, the word viability is key here, because the abortion law only applies to children.
It's a babies. Child that is there on, there's a child literally living, an individual soul living there. Don't you have an obligation? Don't we as a society, a compassionate, loving society, have an obligation to do everything in our power to help save that life?
Yes, and doctors have a Hippocratic oath. And what this law and what the New York law are doing.
So what the governor is advocating for would be legalization in that case of destroying a human life that's alive, viable, living on its own, and not providing the proper medical care?
No, because the law doesn't apply if the child is viable. Women are seeking late-term abortions in some respects because the children are not viable.
Okay, you can give me all the caveats you want, but these bills, as they so cleverly are written, only say health. That means emotional health? Oh, I'm dilated, but you know what? I can't handle this. I really can't do this now. And you got a doctor
really
that's...
Think that's
and what about
happen.
What about
you
doctor?
Really think what, that's going to happen?
Well, what about Dr. Gosnell? There are doctors like him. Remember him?
Of course. So
okay. By the way, if you want a doctor to give you pills, like there's plenty of doctors that'll give you any medicine you want. There are unethical people in every business, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah. So there are unethical doctors that would probably think this is fine, and they'll do it and make a lot of money, right?
No.
Yeah.
I think. Generally speaking, abortion providers care about the health of the fetus. They care about the health of the woman. They don't do
If
this
it's stuff. Legal, this is the point. Why, Jonathan, do these liberals now, why has this now become their big number one issue, seemingly?
I don't know, Sean, but it is. This is probably one of the most troubling things I personally have ever had to deal with, not because I'm going through getting an abortion or having a girl get an abortion, but because I'm a guy who swore an oath to defend this country against this very thing of killing and even considering killing babies. And it is, I'm in a quandary here because I didn't think that the country would ever even get to this crazy type of a process. And it's so bad, it's hard for me to even come up with words to describe it. And Daniel, I love you, Death. You're a good friend of mine. But I cannot understand how liberals, and everybody knows me, knows I don't like the terms liberal and conservative. I like to think effectively and neutral. Is this effective? Can we get it done? But I'm shocked when liberals will even attempt to defend this or even attempt to say that this is something that can be justified, even no matter what. I mean, if a woman is going to, if there's a baby that is viable, that is a living, breathing soul. And we have scientists that will say we found a bacteria possibly on Mars. There might be life on Mars, but yet they're not considering an embryo in a human being a living creature. And now we've gone to the point where they will actually terminate a child. And Sean, this goes beyond politics. This just goes into murder, and it goes into where you're talking. You played the soundbite where, or you talked about the bill that she, that the other woman proposed.
Yeah, save the canker worms, the caterpillars, whatever it is.
They'll save a worm.
What is a canker worm anyway? Does anyone know? Do you know what a canker worm is? I don't know what one is.
A worm is a worm, as far as I'm concerned.
What is a canker worm, Danielle?
I think it's a caterpillar. I can Google it for you if you like.
I think it's a caterpillar, too. But the point is, she's sponsoring the bill that protects the lives of the canker worms, but supports a woman dilating and beginning the birth process that you can decide then not to have the baby.
All right. Look, I get the optics are horrible. And what you're doing is you're taking
Whoa. Is it the
extreme
Oh, stop. Wait a minute. Whoa. The optics are horrible.
Yeah, well, I mean,
she's advocating is horrible.
I want to be very clear about the reason for this, and there's so much here that we're not going to get to. The reason that we are seeing late-term abortions, the reason we see abortions in some respects, is because women are not getting the health care that they need. We should be doing everything we can to make
sure. So if we have Medicare for all, your argument is going to be if we have Medicare for all,
we wouldn't be
at this point. Is that your point?
It's not, but if we were more supportive within the reproductive health field from the preventative side, we wouldn't be seeing the kind of numbers of abortions that we do see.
You know, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. And if people want to get a health check on a child, that is easily accomplished. Amniocentesis, all sorts of ways and procedures that can be done. Blood tests. You know, we've come a long way. Look at the 4D now sonograms we have. You see the face of a child inside of a mother with all its features, fingers and toes. Anyway, I'm not buying any of that. I think that's an excuse.
You often talk about the diversity of viewpoints in the Democratic caucus and your group. There are pro-life Democrats in your group. Considering the comments from Governor Northam yesterday, how does that make it harder for pro-life Democrats in the party? Does that cause problems, Bill?
I'm sorry. I just don't know what he said yesterday. I just don't know.
All right, as we continue our news roundup, information overload hour, Danielle McLaughlin and Jonathan Gillum. You know, Jonathan, it just is, even with the governor describing all of this and all of its gruesome and grotesque, well, we'll deliver the baby, we'll make the baby comfortable, and then we'll sit back and we'll have a discussion about whether to resuscitate, offer medical care, or let the baby just die in front of us as we have a discussion. So I can't believe this is now the party, that this is the cause, that and stealing wealth. That's the party. That's your Democratic Party.
I mean, what's the difference in that and seeing a five-year-old who's choking in a restaurant and saying, you know what, I'm tired of having a kid and letting the kid choke to death? Well, I mean, honestly, what is the difference? There's no difference there. And I think ultimately, Sean, the bottom line here is that this is what happens when you allow politicians and the courts to make decisions about life, that politicians and judges that are not ethical, that put their politics first. And that's what we have here. They're talking about life of a child, and yet they're pushing their political agenda forward. I'm just speechless, as well as are the rest of the people that I talk to that have sworn an oath to defend this country. And I don't know what the next step is here in this country, but this is far beyond what I ever thought it would be.
I don't even know why you're trying to defend this. You know, you should. But by the way, you know, the president, you know, ripped the Democrats as the party of late term abortion and open borders and, of course, wealth confiscation. If you look at the polling, way majority of Americans, guess what? They don't want third term abortions. But if that's what you want to do, then you know what? You keep advocating for it, you and your fellow Democrats. I don't think it's going to work out well for anybody. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Jonathan Gillum. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. So the president, I want to play this press conference. The president addresses North Korea, Mexico, the border wall, the trade negotiations with China that are going on right now as we speak. This is just from a little earlier.
If it shipped to the United States, that would be a very severe penalty. I think that's going to have a tremendous impact. We put that one item into the trade deal, the fentanyl. I think it's a very important item to put in. But they've agreed very readily. We really appreciate it, to criminalize the sale of fentanyl. Steve?
You think you'll make the March 1 deadline?
I don't know. I mean, it's... I can tell you there's a lot of people are working. What happens, we're charging large tariffs to Chinese products that are coming in, which hurts China. As you know, you saw the reports. Out of the 25 points, we're paying for 4 points out of the 25. They're paying for 21. That's a big difference. I've always said that. We're taking in billions of dollars, and frankly, we're creating a lot of industry. But the rate goes from 10% to 25% on March 1st. So they would like to do it, and I'd like to accommodate them. If we can, I'd like to accommodate China if we could get the deal done. It's a lot of work because this is a very comprehensive deal. This isn't what we're talking about, you know, they're going to buy some corn and that's going to be it. No, they're going to buy corn. Hopefully, they're going to buy lots of corn and lots of wheat and lots of everything else that we have. But they're also talking heavy technology, heavy manufacturing, financial services, and everything else.
So you may have to extend the call beyond March the 1st. Is that what you're saying, sir?
I think we can do it by March 1st. Can you get it down on paper by March 1st? I don't know. I can say on March 1st, the tariff on China goes to 25%. And that's a big tariff.
What's the tone looking like at the State of the Union, sir? And then I don't know if you've seen Democrats have tapped the rebuttal speech, Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor of Georgia. Any thoughts on their picture or any of the messages?
Oh, I campaigned against Stacey Abrams. I know that President Obama campaigned for her, Michelle Obama campaigned for her, and Oprah campaigned for her. And all Brian had was me. And he won fairly easily, you know, fairly easily. So I hope that she does a good job. I mean, I respect her. I don't know her. I haven't met her, but I hope she does a good job.
And so for your speech, sir, can you tell us how to
speak? I think it's unification. I think it's industry. I think it's about the people that you see right here. It's also working with these people because they've been incredible. We have had some incredible report, and we've had incredible Republican support. The problem is the Democrats, you know, when they say we don't want to build, as an example, we don't want to build a wall because it doesn't work or because it's immoral. Well, it's also immoral, the people that come into our country that shouldn't be here and kill people. That's immoral, too. That's a lot more immoral. So, but I really think it's going to be a speech that's going to cover a lot of territory, but part of it's going to be unity. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, Nancy Pelosi said this morning that there is not going to be a wall in this deal, but she did say she'd be open to other kinds of physical barriers. Would you accept that?
No, because if there's no wall, it doesn't work. She's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work. And we're building the wall right now. I mean, a lot of people don't know that, but we have a lot of wall under construction. We've given out a lot of contracts over the last 3-4 weeks, good contracts. A lot of wall is soon going to be under construction. We're finishing up design on certain areas, the most important areas, the Rio Grande area and others. We are building a lot of wall. You know, I'm not waiting for this committee. And I've told a lot of people, I don't expect much coming out of the committee because I keep hearing the words that we'll give you what you want, but we're not going to give you a wall. And the problem is, if they don't give us a wall, it doesn't work. Without a wall, it doesn't work. We have caravans right now coming up from Honduras, who we give a lot of money to, which is stopping, by the way. But we pay hundreds of millions of dollars. Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And then they have caravans leaving their country coming up here. And by the way, if you go to Tijuana and you take down that wall, you will have so many people coming into our country that Nancy Pelosi will be begging for a wall. She'll be begging for a wall. She will say, Mr. President, please, please give us a wall. It'd be very interesting. Some people have suggested, let me take the wall along California. Let's move it to Arizona. Let's move it to Texas. And, you know, it'd be a very interesting statement about Nancy. So in California, they wanted the wall built in San Diego so badly. And we built it. And probably I should have waited, because as soon as it was finished, they started screaming, we don't want a wall, we don't want a wall. But they wanted the wall so badly. And by the way, it worked. Nobody's getting through. But the minute it was built, they started saying, we don't want a wall. Without a wall, it doesn't work. It's very simple. I mean, I'm not saying this as a Republican. I'm not saying it as anything other than a fact stater. Without a wall, it just doesn't work.
Mr. Yes. After listening to the hardship from many federal government workers, as well as those contractors and who relied on the federal government employees' finances to fund their businesses, are you willing to jeopardize the economy again and also your presidency with people who are fearful of another government shutdown over this wall?
So,
and also,
yeah.
I want to ask you about Jesse Smollett, if you've heard about that story. The Chicago situation, the actor from Empire, who was allegedly attacked with racist and homophobic.
That, I can tell you, is horrible. I've seen it last night. I think that's horrible. It doesn't get worse, as far as I'm concerned. As far as the people are concerned, many of those people wanted me to stay out, but I didn't want to do it because people were getting hurt. What I think is the worst sin of all is the fact that we're allowing people to come into this country and sell drugs and human traffic and do all of these horrible things, that if we had the simplicity of a well-constructed, beautiful barrier or wall, they wouldn't be able to come into our country. That, to me, is the great sin. And everybody knows it works. I watched this morning, early in the morning, somebody trying to justify walls are immoral. I mean, if walls are immoral, maybe we should take down all the walls that are built right now. You will see a mess like you've never seen before. So I only say this. I was elected partially on this issue. Not as much as people say, but partially on this issue. This is a very important issue. Nothing to do with elections, nothing to do with votes, only to do with common sense and only to do with security. And if we don't put up a barrier or wall, a strong one, but one that looks good. In the old days, they used to build them, they looked terrible. Now we build them, they look really good. If we don't put up a physical barrier, You can forget it. Our country is going to be a very unsafe place. People are coming in. Drugs are coming in. Human trafficking is coming in, which is so horrible. Things are happening that won't happen after the wall is constructed. So we're building a lot of wall. We're building new sections starting in about 2 weeks. We're building some brand new sections, large sections, and the wall is getting built. I would like to build it even faster, but it's getting built, and it's getting built very substantially, as some of you see because you've been there. Yeah, please.
I have an immigration question, but first, if I could just clarify what something you said about North Korea. Do you have an agreement with North Korea on the time and place for that next summit?
Yes.
Can you share it?
Yeah, we're going to very soon. We're going to announce it pretty soon. We'll be announcing it early next week.
Okay. And the you also said that...
And they very much want the meeting, and I think they really want to do something. We'll see, but I think they really want. But again, remember, North Korea was a whole different story. When I came to office, many people thought we were going to war with North Korea. I would sit and listen, and I would read people saying, go to war with North Korea. Well, you'd lose, I mean, potentially hundreds of millions of lives. You know, Seoul has 30-some-odd million people, and it's literally right off their wall, by the way. But that wall works, I can tell you.
About the wall, you just said that people make that out to be a bigger deal on your election than you think it was.
Well, it was one of my points.
I
do. Now they say it's a wall because I've accomplished practically everything else. Look, I accomplished the military. I accomplished the tax cuts. I accomplished the regulation cuts. I accomplished so much. The economy is the number one economy in the world. We're the number one economy in the whole world. We're the number one, not even close. Companies are pouring into our country. I've accomplished so much. So now they say, oh, if he doesn't get the wall, they make that the only issue. But it's not going to work because I'm building the wall. The wall's happening right now. Okay?
Are you, the government's been reopened for several days now. Are you closer or farther apart on immigration deals now than since you opened the government?
With respect to the committee?
Yes.
I would say we're the same. Because I'm hearing they don't want to do a wall for political reasons. I actually think it's bad politics. I mean, frankly, I think them fighting us on what everybody knows has to be done to have proper security. And you can add the other things. But the other things only really work if you have the physical barrier. Without the physical barrier, you just, well, what are you going to have, drones flying over the 12,000 people? You're going to have a nice drone flying, doing circles around the 12,000 people that are walking in from Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador. No, you don't want that. So I want to do real things, like the deal with China. I want it to be a real deal. I could do a deal with China where people would say, isn't that wonderful? It's not wonderful. I have to do the real deal. We have to open up China. We're open to them. They have to be open to us. So it'd be so easy for me to make a deal with China, but it wouldn't be a real deal. I could get them to buy more corn than they've ever bought and more soybeans than they've ever bought, and they'd be so happy if I did that. But they're going to do that, but in even higher numbers, but we're going to do a lot of other things. And just remember, we are taking in billions and billions of dollars from China. We never took in 10 cents from China. China's being charged tremendous amounts of money for the privilege of coming in and doing what they do to our country. They're being charged a tremendous amount of money. And we're going to make a deal. I think we're going to make a deal with China, but it's going to be a very comprehensive deal. We're going to cover everything, okay?
On the economy, you mentioned all the economic indicators are going up. Why then is are U.S. deficits and the national debt increasing at a time when...
Well, the trade deals won't kick in for a while. You know, number one, the USMCA hasn't even been approved yet. It has to go before Congress and get approved. That should get approved quickly. NAFTA was one of the worst deals ever made. During the campaign, I said I will either terminate NAFTA or negotiate a new deal. And we negotiated a good deal. Now, if you went back to pre-NAFTA, that would be frankly okay with me, pre-NAFTA or the new deal, but I won't allow NAFTA. NAFTA was a horrible deal for this country. You look at the scars all over our country where you go to New England, you go to Ohio, you go to Pennsylvania, you see what happened in North Carolina. You have factories that are still empty from what happened with NAFTA. NAFTA was a horrible deal. The USMCA is a great deal. But pre-NAFTA, we had huge surpluses with Mexico. With NAFTA, we have huge deficits. We lose $100 billion a year on trade with Mexico. Does that sound good? And this has been going on for many years. So I stopped it. I stopped it a lot.
One more on the wall. You said the wall is being basically held hostage for political reasons by the Democrats. Is there anything you would have done differently in the first two
years? No, there's nothing. Look, they had this from day one. Yeah. Could I have done it differently? No, not really. I mean, I think what by having the shutdown, we've set the table for where we are now. If I didn't do the shutdown, people wouldn't know. They wouldn't understand the subject. Now they understand the subject. They realize what a humanitarian crisis it is. It's sort of, it's called like in deal-making, setting the table. Or, you know, setting a stage. We've set the stage for what's going to happen on the 15th of February. I don't think they're going to make a deal. I see what's happening. They're all saying, oh, let's do this, but we're not giving one dime for the wall. That's okay. But if they're not going to give money for the wall, it's not going to work. And if it's not going to work, then the politicians are really wasting a lot of time. Okay. I would do that. Yeah. I would do that. We have money, just so you understand. We have money. We're building the wall right now, a lot of it. People don't know that, and nobody reports it, but that's okay, because it's not very exciting when you say it's built. You know. But let me just tell you, we're building the wall right now. It's going up fairly rapidly. We're renovating tremendous amounts of wall, which is good stuff that's in very bad shape with massive holes in it and fencing coming down. It's being beautifully renovated. In some cases, we have to replace it. We renovate some, we replace some, we build some new. But the wall is going up right now in all different forms. Thank you very much, everybody.
Let's go.
We're going to see what happens on February 15th.
Are you concerned about legal challenges?
No, I'm not concerned.
You still don't think there's going to be a deal, but you're not going to declare it now. Don't you think that undermines...
I'm waiting. Excuse me. I didn't say that. I said I'm waiting till February 15th. On February 15th, the committee will come back. And if they don't have a wall, I don't even want to waste my time reading what they have, because it's a waste of time. Because the only thing that works for security and safety for our country is a wall. Now, when you couple the wall with sensors and drones and all of these other things, that works as a combination. But if you don't have a wall, they're all just wasting their time. It's just politics. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much, everybody.
All right, that was the president earlier today making a lot of news. We'll have a lot of this on Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We had an amazing show tonight. Remember the story of the so-called Dr. Gosnell? Well, there's a new production out about it. We're going to highlight some of that tonight. Ari Fleischer, Congressman Crenshaw, Dan Bongino, and Dr. Gorka. All coming up, 9 Eastern, all the hot news, burning issues, the caravan getting closer, and the president closer to going it alone. That's tonight, 9 Eastern, on Fox, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.